for this beautiful facility, for this great meal, the sweet fellowship we had around it, continuing to have around it. We think of our friends down in the new members class and the theology class, the youth group, all the places around the buildings tonight, that you would be with them each and bless them each as your word is discussed and taught and the principles are applied in different ways. Thank you that we have the chance to come and gather in a place like this. This is all according to your hand, and we don't take that for granted. Now we pray that you would be with us tonight and give us good insight and helpful wisdom in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so we have reached the last of the sessions. This is week number 5 on marriage and parenting from a Christian perspective. So I've got a fair amount of material tonight, probably too much material for a single setting. I don't know if we'll get all the way through it. We might. I'll try to gauge that. I want to be sensitive to the time tonight. So just a forewarning that we may feel a little bit rushed and talk about some matters that I hope will be helpful to you as parents or grandparents. We're going to talk tonight about, for lack of a better word, kind of a paradigm of changing roles as parents or as grandparents. Tonight applies equally as equally well to anybody involved with raising your family. As a matter of fact, the last point that we may not get to very thoroughly deals with the question of the church at large and its place in parenting young people and raising them and helping them as they mature. Just by way of a reminder, again, the book that I'm using tonight and drawing most of the material comes from this book by last names are Powell and Argue, Kara Powell, and I forget the gentleman's first name, Stephen. Kara Powell and Stephen Argue. And the book is called Growing With. So if you are interested in hearing more and learning more about all that we're talking about, this is a good, good resource that I have found. It's far from perfect as any book is, but it is very, very helpful in my opinion. And I've learned a good bit from it and grateful for it. Growing With. So tonight, I wish I had a board. I'm so used to teaching with a board, a whiteboard behind me or something that I can kind of use as visuals. And I don't have that in here. So I hope that you're able to sort of keep in your mind the things that we're talking about tonight. We're going to talk about, I'm going to skip over one era. We're going to talk about three eras or phases of young people growing and maturing on into adulthood and our place as older Christians. I'm 46 years old, so younger than most of you, but our children, Anna and I, have kids that are in really, for the most part, two of the three stages that we're going to talk about tonight. So those three stages of rearing children, and again, by way of implication, the stuff we're going to mention tonight, I think, certainly will resonate with everyone, but also will have points of implication or points of application for each of us in the church, whether we've got kids in the home or not, whether we've got grandkids that are that we influence or not, because these principles really apply to all, in my estimation, most specifically, they apply to all Christians in a local given church, but especially to the parents raising these young ones. So the three eras, the three stages of a child's life that we're going to talk about tonight, these terms come from Kara Powell, Stephen Argue. They are called the stage of learners, of explorers, and of focusers. That's the terms they use. They sound a little, what are we talking about here? That sometimes, I don't know about you, I kind of get the willies, you know, when people come up with these terms. They're just so nice and neat and square and, you know, kind of easy to plug and play. And they kind of gives me the hives a little bit. But learners, explorers, and focusers. And the idea here is that each of these age ranges carry with them different different unique challenges that the young people face, and therefore opportunities we have as adults to help steward them and shape them in a Godward direction. Learners ages 13 to 18, roughly speaking, explorers are the 18, 24-year-old kind of college and just out of college age range. And then the focusers are on into the second half of the 20s and maybe right up to about 30 years old or so. So with each of those, the learners, the explorers, the focusers, you and I have responsibilities to them each as teachers, guides, and resourcers. So there you go. There's the couplet. Learners, our kids, our role during the age of them as learners, which I'll define and explain in a few minutes. Our role as mature believers is to be teachers for them in that stage. That's what they need from us. They are learners. We are teachers. They are explorers. I'll define that and explain that when we get there. They need from us to be guides. And then as they are focusers, meaning focusing on becoming adults and mature, responsible citizens, they need from us to be resources. And there's a difference in our role as parents and grandparents leaning into our kids in these different stages. And we can make some very important, helpful contributions to their growing life. And we can also make some harmful mistakes if we don't manage our responsibility as well. So here's what I mean by all that. That's by way of introduction and big picture stuff. Ages 13 to 18. I'm skipping over what they did not talk about, but I sort of contributed my own thoughts to this. I'm skipping over the ages, the first decade or so of life. Our time is just too short, so we're not going to lean into that a whole lot. What I would call foundations and builders. Learners and teachers. So here on into the teenage years, that's where we're picking up from some of the stuff we considered last week. Learners. What is it about the learners? This is the teenage years, ages 13 through 18. You've got grandkids and kids in that era of life, that period of life, I should say. What are they learning? Well, let's just define this. The learners, these are those young people for whom life is changing rapidly. Their own experience of life is most rapidly changing. They are experiencing at those ages all manner of quick physical change, all manner of emotional change and relational change and intellectual change. You know how it is, these teenage kids. But our context especially is for us to remember that these young people, there are 30 of them gathered down there this very minute in our youth group. They are experiencing a great deal of spiritual change. So, of course, they're going through physical change. They're coming out of their adolescent years into teenage years. The boys' voices are changing. The girls are starting to develop. It's just, you know, they're going through this. How do I react with this? What do I do? That changes emotionally for them. It's fast paced. And they're learning how to deal with all of these changes. They have to learn how to deal with the changing nature of their relationships. They're moving out of the mommy and daddy phase and they're into what phase? And trying to, you know, they are trying to figure out, whether they realize it or not, they are trying to figure out how to deal with the changing nature of their relationships. On the intellectual front, this is the age when they are being challenged. Not quite the same depth that they will be challenged when they go into that early 20s stage, when many of them are off to college. I'll have something to say on that in a minute. But nevertheless, things are challenging for them. They are being challenged intellectually and they're being challenged spiritually. So on the spiritual front, this is the stage of their life where they begin to learn. This is something that we have to remember. Because we see our young kids. I'm a parent. I've got one. What do we have? We have seven total. How many do we have that are teenagers? Four? We have four teenagers. And in just a couple months, we'll have five teenagers. So that doesn't make us experts. It just makes us experienced. And crazy. So what are our kids learning and doing and developing? Well, they are developing a framework. Whether you and I realize it or not, whether you as grandparents realize it, your teenage grandkids are developing a framework through which they are reading and interpreting their faith, the Christian faith, their faith. You are raising them in the church, or if your grandkids, maybe they're not being raised in the church, but you are having great spiritual influence on them, Lord willing. That's why you want to talk about these things. So they are learning that faith at this age, they are for the first time experiencing this reality that faith, Christian faith, is not a simple act of repeating Bible verses. When they're in that foundation stage, right, when they're young, we're giving them black and white stuff. We're teaching them basics of the Bible and Bible stories, and we're singing songs. Jesus loves me, this I know, and this is the world that they're inhabiting. We all know as parents that that ends, right? And as Christians in the church, we are all these kids that are running off into children's church every Sunday, and they're learning these things. It's very good to build that foundation, but we all know that's going to end. Well, what's the nature of it coming to an end? The nature of it coming to an end is they realize that faith is not so simple. Christian faith is not so simple. That being a Christian is more than something that you do on Sundays. When our kids are young, or when they're very young, they're not looking to see if what they are learning in church has any impact on their parents. It's just not a paradigm for them. They don't think about it like that. You know, it's what they do. They're growing up in the church. But as they become teenagers, that's the first phase for them of curiosity. Because there's this intellectual development that's happening too. Curiosity, not about their bodies, well, maybe that too, or about the world around them, that too. But I'm talking about curiosity of the faith. And that's because there's this intellectual development that's crashing in on them all at the same time. And so they're trying to figure this out. They don't know how to ask the questions. They don't know how to interact with this. They don't know what all of these things mean. They're meeting people outside the church that are coming from homes that are very adamantly opposed to what it is that they're being taught. This is the first time they're interacting with that. And they think about how others think about them. This is that time in their lives. And if we fail to recognize their developing doubts, and we fail to recognize their developing spiritual fight, then we do them a disservice because we leave them dangling. If we assume at this teenage years, in this learner years, if we respond to them the same way we respond to them when they were littler, when they were 8 and 9, if we've not grown with them, that's why this book is called Growing With. If we are failing to respond to them and grow with them as they enter into this, we do them a terrible disservice because we are trying to answer their gray area questions with very black and white answers. And that doesn't work. And so they grow very frustrated. That's not what a good teacher does. And so as parents, that's what we're talking about. We have to grow with them, and we have to learn as parents and grandparents and Christians in the church where these young ones are coming up, not to be threatened by their questions about the Bible, and not to be threatened by their questions of issues that are of interest to them. When they're young, they like what we like when they're coming on up. But when they enter into this next intellectual stage where they are, you know, they are, there's a natural desire to explore and even to rebel and to question things. We as parents have to give them room and not ourselves be threatened by the things that are of interest to them. So for example, creation, We have a class going on Thursday nights here at the church on creation, right? This is the stage of life when they start asking the harder questions about creation. What about dinosaurs? What about age of the earth and these things that science that's telling us rocks are, you know, billions upon billions of years old? Scientific discovery versus some of the mistakes that Christians have made in the past. Christians have made a lot of mistakes in the past. The Copernican Revolution is all about big mistakes that the Christians made in the past when somebody discovered that the earth was round. And they said, you must die for thinking this. Well, the Christians made a terrible mistake in that. Scientific discovery was a threat to the church. And so this is something that our kids are, this is that stage of life when they're learning that the church was wrong on certain issues. The church was wrong on race relations. For a lot of years, the church was wrong on race relations. And so we as Presbyterians have a very rich and wonderful history in a lot of areas, and we have a very, very dark underbelly in other areas, to include race relations. Presbyterians have a very poor track record, with some notable exceptions. This is that time of life for them that they are learning those realities. So how are we going to respond to that? What if they are in this frame of stage of life, or even on to the next stage of life, and they want to announce to you that they're not a Republican? You know, can I be an evangelical Christian and not be a Republican? The answer is yeah. You can, you know, and this is the time when they are developing those kinds of realities. They're learning about themselves and about the world. What about gay and lesbian and LGBTQ and women in leadership in the church? All of these difficult questions. Our task as teachers is not to be threatened by their questioning, because they're soon to be gone. They're soon to be moving out of the house. And if they learn that we as parents, or if they learn that we as grandparents, that we as a church are threatened by those questions, that gets translated into, they're very narrow and I don't want anything to do with it. And it becomes a major problem when they leave, as I explained last time. So major mistake with respect to this first stage of their development is failing to grow with your kids out of the innocent days of ABC Christianity, and thus being threatened and failing to respond. So here's what my advice to you would be, and then I'll be glad to hear your thoughts on this if you have any. Don't get angry and don't get threatened and don't fear. You remember last week, great emphasis last week on fear-based parenting versus trust-based parenting. Don't get angry, don't get threatened, and don't fear that their changing views and their experiences of the world means that they are rejecting Christ and they're rejecting the truth. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. They're not mature. You and I are mature. We have been Christians for a longer period of time, or at least we know some of the mistakes we've made, and we're looking back, and we can make that mistake of projecting on them the things that we went through in our own experiences. Don't do that. That's the practical implication here. What we should do as parents is to steward their rapidly changing self-conception by helping them interact with the world in a better way. Teach them not to be afraid of their own doubts, because these are kids. They are young people. They're emerging out of the safe, cute, quaint, fun youngest years, when it's, you know, it's rainbows and it's bubbles. It's ABC Christianity. They're emerging out of that. And all of a sudden, they are now questioning things. And so our task as teachers Because that's the response when this is the need that they have, is to help them steward these things in a better way. So what are you doing as it relates to engaging and stewarding their lives is building a platform for yourself. When you help your teenage kids, something that Anna and I have tried greatly to emphasize with our own kids, our own teenage kids. We've got one that's emerging out of this phase and into the next one. And right behind him is another that's going to be making this move into the next phase. And so we've got these five teenage kids here. And something that we have always done, we got some good counsel and some good examples as we were younger parents. We also saw some bad examples. We learned from the bad examples from some older parents that are friends of ours and have been friends of ours. And we've also learned from some friends of ours and some really great examples on how to steward the changing views and the changing dynamics that teenage kids are dealing with for the first time. Of course they don't know how to handle it. Of course they act the fool. Of course they act rebellious. It's the only thing they know how to do. It's the only thing that comes natural, because this is the first time in their life that they're intellectually analyzing their faith against the big bad world. And they're learning stuff through school and through peers or whatever it is, and through TV shows and movies and so forth, which they ought to be learning those things. Don't shield your kids away from those things as they're making their way into these teenage years, so that they are asking these questions and you have a reasonable answer. They need from you to be their teacher. Something that we've learned is to help these young kids, as a good teacher does, to help the young children, the young teenage kids, learn how to answer the questions that they are raising. It's good for us to say, well, this is the answer. But they're moving out of that phase where it's just, this is the answer, and that's the end of the conversation. They are into the phase of, well, why is that the answer? And we can give them the why that's the answer to whatever questions that they may be having and doubts and challenges to their faith and so forth. But better is to help talk them through it. That's what I mean by stewarding them through it. And so to have those very open conversations, and when they raise questions about their own faith, to not respond in anger or even disrespect of your children. So a good teacher. We are teachers to learners. Let me just talk briefly on this idea, teachers as teachers to learners, before we move on to the next phase. This book uses the language, the idea of what they are calling a learner-centered teacher. All right, so learner-centered. All right, so we're a teacher that's focused, you know, center of my life as a parent or a grandparent is to understand what these young ones are going through, to have a very conscientious awareness of what they are interacting with the world, though they don't know it. And I'm centering my role as teacher on that experience for them. Because kids at this age frustrate us. They're very frustrating. Especially after 12 years of building a foundation for them. So we've been building a foundation for 10, 12, 13 years for them. Now they're calling into question everything that we've taught them. And it's a sense of a personal rejection. Well, you don't like, what are you asking? You should know this. I've taught you this for 12 years. We don't think like that. There's nothing I've said to you taken. And we take that as a personal rejection. That's a bad teacher. That's not a good parent move. Right? A good parent move wants to lean in there, or a tendency maybe on the other extreme to withdraw once they reach this age. To withdraw, I'll confess, this is my tendency. My tendency is to see my older teenage kids and to say, "Well, you're responsible. You guys are older. You can make some decisions." And my tendency is to just let them do it, just to withdraw, not emotionally withdraw, but just kind of, you know, that's my inclination. That too is wrong. It's true. Certainly we've got to give them their space to grow and to make mistakes, but never at the expense of drawing near to our teenage kids. This is that era, this stage of life, 13 to 18, when they most need mom and dad. If God is pleased for mom and dad to be in the home, or grandparents, when you are most required to draw near to them. Without smothering them, without helicoptering them, without, you know, but drawing near to them. So the vigilance, this is taken from, I thought this is a very insightful comment they made. The vigilance required here is to step closer to the teens than ever before, to see their lives, to know them as they're in the process of becoming of who they're going to be, and to engage with them. That's the vigilance required for being a good teacher at this age, this stage of life. Again, we're just talking high level, sort of flyover principial ideas here that will be applied differently to different family situations. But the idea, the principle here, as teachers to these learners, what they need from us, is to engage with them, to draw near to them, to let them be known by us, even as they are known to us as parents and grandparents and church members. The teacher here invites a certain collaboration because the time has passed when they have reached this age for the answer to whatever it is they're asking to be because I said so. When they're in this age, that time has passed. They need some collaboration. I'm not remotely suggesting that we just become their friends and just help them through. We are still their authority. We're still their disciplinarians. But there's a way that gets applied here at this phase of life. It's different than when they were 7 or 8 years old because it's important to recognize their new phase in life. And so this is where you begin to learn about their own preferences and begin to hold loosely to your own preferences as parents or grandparents or things that interest them, as long as they're not sinful things and rebellious things. I've got some of my children like the same things that I like, and it's easy to have those conversations with them. Others of my kids are really, really into things I couldn't care less about, and I just have no clue about. You know, and they want to show me things late at night that they've found and discovered and how exciting it is. And I'm like, you know, it's great. I really wanted to see this, you know, or whatever. This is being recorded, so I'll not throw anybody under the bus here. But yeah, you know, that's just the reality, right? So we shepherd them through this new phase of life, holding loosely to our own preferences, to our own opinions, to our own likes. And so let me read to you, practically speaking, here is how these good folks would offer to us the top questions for teachers of learners, parents, grandparents, under the rubric of this phase of life where they are learners, making us this phase of life where we are teachers. That's kind of the paradigm of parenthood at this stage. So here are some good questions for us, parenting people in this age. Where is my child, grandchild growing? And how do I affirm their progress? Good question to ask. When they're younger, it's not really a paradigm for us. How are they growing? Well, everything they're doing is right under our nose. But now they're distant a little bit. They're growing up. They're having other experiences. And so that's a good question to ask. Now, given my commitment to being with them, what are some new ways that I might try to connect with my child in this stage of their life? Good question to ask. How might I find ways to connect with my child? Another question, where does my child need feedback to help them grow in their knowledge? Help them grow in their habits and skills and competencies, right? As they're moving into this phase of life. All sorts of them here. You can come take a picture of this page if you want at the end of the class. You can see these. What aspects of my teenager's life should I connect with them, connect them with other adults who are better positioned to teach them than I am? That's a really, really important question to ask, right? I want you all as a parent. As I said, I've got 5 teenagers. I not only want, I require, I need you all to have influence on my kids. I need my kids to be discipled by the church. And so what areas of my child's growing life and growing interest and as they kind of move out of my living room, so to speak, can I connect them with people that would have good influence on them, which I'll talk, influencing is another stage. But where they would be of good value. And so it's very important. And what aspects of my teenager's life should I connect them with other adults who are better positioned to teach them than I am? This is a hard stage for parents, for me as a parent of lots of teenagers, to realize that I am not the best person in every aspect of my child's life. It's hard because when they're younger, I'm everything to them, right? When they're youngest kids, you're the dad, you're the hero. You can do no wrong, and you know, you're Superman. They are learning in this stage of life for the first time that I'm not those things. And that there are other people who are better positioned than I am to influence them in good ways, you know. And so we share that responsibility. So, but that's different from when they are very young kids, and that's a different role to play than when they are 28, right? This is the teenage years that they very much need that teacher aspect because they are learning about themselves and about the world. So that's this stage. That's the stage as parents of growing with our teenage kid. This is not meant to say, you know, in 29 minutes, I've just covered how you raise kids through being teenagers. Obviously that's not, I'm just simply giving the principle. I just don't want you to think anything other than that. But that's the idea there. Growing with them, understanding where they are with all the intellectual, relational, physical, emotional, and spiritual change that they are going through. This is what they need of us as they go through that stage. And that leads to the next stage, which is a really exciting stage. And I'm at the place, Anna and I are at the place, which is hard to believe. Because in my mind, you know, I'm still 24 and, you know, bulletproof and everything else. And I tried to go surfing or something the other night with Samuel and on boogie boards. And I couldn't paddle. I got a shoulder that doesn't go anywhere past here. And I got an ankle that I trashed when I fell off of this. I can't kick with that. And I can't go with it. I'm like, out there, and he's just catching waves all over the place. This is great, Dad! He's taking off, and, you know, I'm thinking, I'm getting old, and I can't do things that I used to be able to do with great success. And that means my kids are moving from these teenage years, and that learner stage into the next, which this book, these authors identify as the explorer's stage. So basically, this is that college era. College years, whether they go to college or not, that age range, 18 to say 24-ish, you know, I mean, these are kind of soft boundaries here. This is talking about exploring. The term is given to them at this age as explorers because they are sorting through lots of options now that have significant lifelong effects. They're sorting through these kinds of decisions that are big boy decisions now that matter. No longer is it just a cute little conversation to have, and because tomorrow it's going to change and it doesn't matter anymore. Now some of the things they have to sort through matter. Certainly for our experience, and we're all colored by experience, you're starting to talk about kids to college. And so it is a big decision on where they might go to college. Frankly, when we were moving down here just 3 months ago, not quite, this was a big deal for us because we knew that our kids are all going to be in Surfside Beach moving through these phases of life and into the learner stage for some of the younger ones and some of the older ones moving out of that learner stage. And so they're going to be faced with decisions that we have to be very attuned to and that are a big deal, that have some significance. So some of these decisions, including potentially anyway, a choice of a spouse. This is that emerging adulthood phase as opposed to learning phase. these new things now. If the learning phase is when they are learning new things, here's a good way to think about it, is what I'm trying to capture. In that first phase, the learner stage, they're learning new things. In this stage, they are now pursuing these things. The difference being it's coming into them and they're reacting to it. New information about the world, new information about themselves is coming to them and they're reacting to it. So we steward them through that. Now it's going out from them. Now they are in this stage, this 18-24 range, that now they're in pursuit of things. They're in pursuit of what it is that they want to become. They are now in pursuit of the truth about the Christian faith, the grounding of the Christian faith. Certainly legally and even socially, they're expected to take on new responsibilities. And so they need to be in pursuit of those things. And they are pursuing their future. And they're doing it usually with excitement. And yet there's also a lot of uncertainty. Right? Depending on their grounding and maybe even their own capacity. So this is that age range for them of real life-changing pursuits. Here is where they are trying on many options. And they're looking for your response as parents and grandparents. It's one thing I appreciate about the South, by the way, a little parenthetically here, but I think important. In the South, I've noticed, at least compared to most of the people that I grew up with in the West, there's a little more emphasis on generational connection here in the South, as opposed to out West. There's a little more in the West. There's more of a value, I would say, of exploration and do it on your own and go on the other side of the mountain and make a life for yourself. And in the South, and that carries its own value to that. In the South, however, there's a little more. No, this is our people, you know, and as a result, each of those realities are. Have their own sort of way of experiencing things. And generationally, there's a greater connection. I would dare say that most of you who are grandparents have greater influence on your grandkids than probably most of the kids that I grew up with and their grandparents. My grandparents lived 3,000 miles away in Florida and in Phoenix, you know, 4 or 5 hours away. Wasn't much of an influence. Anna's parents in the Northeast, her grandparents, same way, you know. But you probably have, not all of you, but probably you have greater influence on your grandkids than other parts of the country. That's just the reality of life in the South. Not for everyone, certainly not for me, and even my kids don't really have that. I mean, Anna's parents are pretty influential, but they're in Pennsylvania, and my dad is in Phoenix, you know. So that's every few years they'll see each other. That's it. Now, why do I say that? Because this is when they are in pursuit of things where they are, the language that I've used, they're trying on many options and they're looking for your response as grandparents and as parents. They're looking for your response. We all know this. I mean, this is that 18 to 24 range. We all know this. I've gone through this. Just anecdotally, I look back on my years in that age range. I knew that if I were to come home with an earring, my dad probably would have murdered me on the spot. It just was not an option. You do not put an earring on, not in this house. And so I'm in college. I'm 14 hours drive time away. What do you think I got on the mind? And I didn't have the guts to do it. But man, I was close. So what did I do instead? I grew my hair real long, and you know, I was as ratty as you can get, and I was, you know, had that. I mentioned the cowboy phase, now that passed, and then I was into the, you know, my hair was real long and kind of put it behind, and I had the thought of coming home with one of those magnet earrings, you know, so I could take it out just to freak out my dad and see what he would do. I had a good relationship with my dad, still do, but just to see what would happen. Well, because I was looking for his response. And this is age, and of course, even in the younger years, they're doing the same thing. They're pushing buttons, they're seeing your response. But here in this age, they're doing it not so much as let me push, do what I do to push a button and see how angry you can get. More often than not, there are obviously exceptions to this. This is I'm trying on something of a new identity here, and I'm going to see how you all respond. That's what they're doing in the 18, 24 year range. Lots of examples could be shared here. This, by the way, don't believe it. Speaking of identities and trying on new identities, the question of identity is issue number one in contemporary America, right? Sexual identity and so forth. And young people are polled. And this is the age range when the numbers are significantly higher than anywhere else that identify as transgender or homosexual or lesbian or all these things. That's all very wrong. This is the age where they are trying on things regardless of what they think about them. Because those same people, when they are 32 years old, are polled. And they're like, no, I'm not transgender. You know, I was a college kid. And they're trying things on. It's getting more and more acceptable to be doing more, to try on more and more radical things. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Men and women are the same with respect to their own sense of identity now as they ever have been. But this is a different phase of life for them. And what's acceptable is what they pursue. What's culturally acceptable is what they pursue. So the key here, instinctively, at this age range, this phase of life, they know that the time has come to relate to their parents and grandparents and their church in a different way. They know instinctively the time has come for them to relate to you in a different way than even they did when they were teenagers. More meaningful in a deeper way. But they don't know exactly what that looks like. Spiritually speaking, this is the most common stage to pursue nuances of the Christian faith. I can tell you lots of examples here. I'll give you one. Somebody that we know, their daughter was in this phase. This young girl grew up in the church and godly woman. In this phase, she began to nuance the Christian faith in a unique way. And God was now a she. And fatherhood of God was replaced with motherhood of God. And after all, he gathers his chicks under his wings like a mother and all this kind of stuff. And so this is a nuancing. That kind of stuff happens all the time with this reign. Why? Because they are now dealing and not only dealing with, but now they are in pursuit of the foundational things of truth in this era of their life. And this is the most common place for them to pursue the nuances of the Christian faith, because they are now getting broad exposure to other Christians and to other worldviews. So what do they need from us as parents, grandparents, and church members? They are explorers. What does every explorer need? They need a guide. So that's why in this stage of life as parents and grandparents, and maybe for some of you, this is where you are as grandparents. I don't think there's anybody in here who's our parents that are kids of this age. Maybe there are. We're right on the edge of that ourselves. An in-touch guide knows the terrain. Let's carry the metaphor. An in-touch, a helpful guide for somebody in this age, where they know the terrain, the metaphor of a guide and explorer. They know the terrain. If it's safe terrain, you tell the person that you're guiding, well, go on ahead. It's because you know this terrain. It's safe. So go on ahead and see what's out there. And you know, oh, wait till they get around the corner. They're going to see the lake and it's going to be beautiful. And they're going to love it. You know, it's safe terrain. But you also know where it's difficult, where it's rocky. And so maybe where it's rocky would be as these young people are dealing with falling in love with somebody. And you know, as their guide, this is dangerous territory. And so you pull them back a little bit and you walk with them as their guide. An in-touch guide knows the difference of the kinds of terrain that they're young person is going through and is able to help them. Our seasoned experience, is most valuable to these explorers at this stage of their life. This is where they need to gain from our seasoned experience in life. If it's from you, from grandparents, if they're not getting that from their parents, your kids, then you can lean into their lives and let them absorb your seasoned experience, because it lays the best foundation for them to lean on us also in the next stage of their life as people that will resource them. So here is it's critical to understand what their goals are, what motivates them. This is where you're starting to learn this about them, and you got to pull that out of them. Something that Anna and I are doing. One of our kids is he's sort of emotionally and relationally in this age range. He's always been a little bit older than his own, peers and so forth. And so this is big for us, and we've learned this ourselves, to learn what motivates them and what their goals are. How are they motivated? What are the goals that they have for this relationship or for this choice of a major in college or whatever it may be? And you can walk your grandkids and your kids through those things, because they will learn from you and your seasoned experience. Probably this is the first time for a parent to discern when it's time to take a step back and encourage them to take the lead. Now, I must confess here, this Anna and I are just now entering that for the first time. And so most of you have gone through this already. And this is that phase where you got to learn, where we have to, I'm really preaching to myself here, to learn to take a step back and discern when the time is to take a step back and let them take the lead while still guiding them. Let them make these decisions and guide them through it, through them. So that's part of a big piece of this parenting. And yet we join with them in the process of a decision or of decision making, not simply giving them a solution. When they're younger, they're in those teen years. We give them a solution. We teach them about the realities of the world, and we help steward them. Here we might feel free to help give them a solution, but the better thing to do at this age, if they're mature enough to handle it, there are some assumptions here. Not simply giving them a solution, but to guide them in this process and join them in this decision-making process. What job, what career change you might do, what major might you select if you're in college? What about changing a major? What about marriage to this boy or marriage to this girl? If they are married at a young age, are we talking about having children? And you can guide them through those decisions. And so that's the basic framework of that particular stage of life. So before we move on to the third and last section, which are focusers, I mean, they are focusing on goals, and they're focusing on those things that are out there. And their world simultaneously becomes smaller and larger, and we'll talk about that. But before we go onto that, let me just pause for a minute and hear from any of you, particularly you grandparents that have gone through these things, and get your feedback if you have any, or you parents, if there's any feedback you want to give on interacting with this. Anything at all that rings a bell or sounds familiar or you've experienced that's helpful to the church? All right. Third is focusers. Focusers. And what a focuser means by that, it means that they are focusing in on the larger things of life. They have been pursuing things in this 18-24 range, and now they're narrowing things down. They're narrowing it down. Now they're in their 25 to 30 year range, this period of time. These are people that are really young adults. I love spending time with these people. I don't have any. My own kids are not there yet, as you know. But in God's kind providence, Anna and I, God's given to us several opportunities to have real influence on some young people in this stage of life for them. Mostly young marrieds, having their first babies when they're, you know, in that 30-year range. It's common and not by any stretch expected, but it's certainly a common time period to be having new marriages and new babies and so forth. And Anna and I have learned a great deal about ourselves, but also about shepherding young people in that stage of life or into their early, perhaps their early 30s, that range. So if a learner needs a teacher and an explorer needs a guide, as parents and focusers, as they focus in on things that matter in life, what they need from you and me is to be resources to them. That's what they need. They need us to be resources. Here's what I mean by all this. As I said, marriage and other relationships and parenthood. This is when our young friends are and sons and daughters are becoming very intentional with friends and lovers, so to speak, with their friend groups and peers. And the people that they have fallen in love with or are falling in love with, some of those relationships are matured and they are well developed. This is that time frame when they are experiencing for the first time, maybe a drifting away from people that meant a lot to them when they were younger. Maybe a friend group from their high school or even college years. They drift away from those friends. They maybe are moving away from you. And they're out of your shadow and they're far further away and they're getting distant from you physically and even relationally. They drift away really for the first time. And that means they are learning to trust people who have influence on their lives in an adult setting. So they have to learn to trust. And maybe you are the person for somebody else that they are learning to trust. You are the person, somebody else's kid that they're learning to trust. Maybe you have a boss, somebody like that, or the big thing in my mind is a mentor. That means that these young people are taking on new responsibilities and they don't know how to do it. So they need somebody to resource them, to guide them, as it were. And this is where they are landing on the things that they have attempted to be. If they weigh out their best options, think of careers or think of cities in which to live, things like this. What these focusers need then are resourcers. Now they realize this is the time frame. Think of your own life. I think of my own life. This is the time when you realize that your parents have gone through all this before. Or your grandparents have gone through all this before. Somebody has drawn up. I've seen it before. It's, you know, there's the phase, another way of thinking about all of this, the phases of life. When you're young, you're Superman and bulletproof. When your kids are young, you're the parents and you're flawless and brave and strong. And then you're the kids become teenagers and suddenly you don't know anything, of course. And they, you know, that, and then they move on in their 20s. And while you may have known some things, in their minds, you did it all wrong. And then they have kids of themselves and they realize I'm just like my mom or my dad, you know, and they're grateful for that. That's a very common kind of pattern of things. And so when they're in that phase, they realize and they value that their parents, the grandparents and other members of their church in our context have gone through all of this. And most want to be treated. Most in this age want to be treated for who they are becoming. They want to be appreciated for their own experiences. And they want to be appreciated and valued for their own passions. And we have an important role to play in encouraging all of those things. We want to resource them with patient advice. It's very important to resource these people with patient advice. As parents, grandparents, no longer is it appropriate for us to demand of them full disclosure of whatever it is that they've got going on. That was fitting when they were younger. Now they are becoming adults. They are adults. They have a life. Our role is to resource them. So let them gain your perspective as the most important resource you can give to them. Let them gain your perspective. An older person saying to them that it'll be all right is better than a peer saying to them it's going to be okay. Because you have the perspective that they need, whether they can articulate that or not. Top questions for resourcers. Top questions for resourcers. Let's see, 65. Yes. Hey, good brother. Yeah. See, that's where I think the church can play a really vital role. You know, Hillary Clinton, can I say that name in here? She has something really, really right to say. When it's not original with her, but she popularized it, that it takes a village to raise a child. She's right on that. The village is the church. And so where, you know, Grandpa Riddle was lacking, and so Daddy Riddle didn't pick up on some of those things. somebody else picks that up. And, where my family lacks, this is where you fill that gap. That's a very critical role. That's why we labor Anna and I labor with our kids on the value of the church. I need the church. That's why I said I need you influencing my kids. I think you need me influencing your kids, not because I'm a pastor, but because I'm a guy, I'm the church, and so are you. That's how it goes. So very insightful points. Thank you, Julian. Questions for the resourcer or mentor? A whole bit that I did not really get to a whole lot, but the resourcer is also the mentor. As time runs short here, think of the paradigm of a mentor. This is the age of life that we have opportunities to mentor. How do I tend to either be too controlling or too aloof in this, and what steps can I take to become, to be a more available mentor or resourcer? Good questions to ask. What can I share from my life events with those that I'm mentoring? What can I share from my own life events that may be of value? Lots of illustrations to give on that. What questions can I ask that will help them think about their own situations from a broader perspective? Good questions to ask as mentors and resources. You don't ask these questions of a teenage kid who's 14. These are questions you're asking with respect to a 27-year-old as they're entering into this phase of mature, responsible life. How do I follow up without checking up? What encouragement can I give to them? Who is another adult, to Julian's point, whose perspective would be beneficial for my young person in this phase of life? Good questions for mentors, resourcers. And finally, why does their decision bother me? Good question. Even if I disagree with, now here the context, we're not talking about sinful things. We're just talking about non-sinful things. Why does their decision bother me? Even if I disagree with their choice, how can I still show support in order to maintain our relational connection? Because they need my mentoring. They need my resourcing. And they need yours. Good questions to ask. So this is as much of a lesson about us as church members with great responsibility with a lot of kids in this congregation. It's a surprising number of young people in this congregation. There's a lot of older saints in this church, but there's also a lot of young folks that we have a chance to help train and to help mentor and teach, guide, and resource. So I hope those are helpful for that. You're welcome to come take a photograph if you want of those top questions on different things for you to have in your mind. Book will be up here. But that is it. We're out of time. I want to be sensitive to the time that we have. Let me close us down with prayer. Our Lord, we are grateful. I am profoundly grateful for all the people in my own life that you brought into my life that helped raise me. Think of my life as a young boy in San Diego and all these people that raised me. And thank you for the young folks that we've had the chance to help raise and develop from their teenage years on into their parenthood years. And it's very kind of you to give us that opportunity. I do thank you for all of these dear saints in this church who are taking a vested interest in the kids of others in these different stages of life, to say nothing of the youngest ones. So we're grateful, and you've given us a magnificent opportunity at this church to have a cross-generational feel and ministry. If you want to help Greg with some chairs,